Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
Well, I'm doing great today, too. Thanks for asking. And we'd like to thank you all for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will talk about the mental material universe driven by a belief in two powers as a lie about the divine creation under the jurisdiction of one power. In this show, we will discuss why Jesus said to the Pharisees, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him." Listen as we explain how divine truth is a demonstrable principle and testifies with deeds, not words. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and overcome the belief in imperfection. Swami, the title of today's show is Spiritual Science as Antidote to Universal Belief. What can you tell us about this title?
Yeah, the reason we chose this title is because it gives us an opportunity to really examine what it is that we're calling life. Even say, for example, the quote that we use here from Jesus, where he's saying he was a murderer from the beginning. Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. This kind of language is somewhat shocking. And more as you start to understand what we're calling life, this mental material concept, isn't life at all. And that was the message of the Christ. And also it is the intention of spiritual science to reveal this truth. Because you can only talk about it and promise it and believe in it so much until eventually it gets to the point where you want some evidence, you want proof. And of course, that is when your belief graduates to faith. In this model, we really start to see the spirit is not just something to believe in, but it is a demonstrable principle. It is a law, but we must be conscious of it. In order for us to demonstrate this divine law with scientific certainty, we must be conscious of the divine creation. And then we're also learning being conscious is not the same as thinking about. And so in these shows, we're really trying to unbox divine science and make it a practical guide for highly effective living.
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is discuss, again, what is the universal belief? Are we saying that universal belief is this belief in two powers, which would be God and matter?
Right. The belief in two powers, the belief in good and bad, duality. Everything that is appearing in your five material senses is a counterfeit for what is really here. What is really here is the divine creation. And the divine creation is perfect, it's whole, it's complete, it's held, controlled, and governed by this divine intelligence. Now, what we're experiencing, all the imperfections, the lack, limitations, sickness, suffering, disease, on this human level, is not backed by that divine creative principle. The only thing that is driving it is our belief in it. It is a reflection of the divine. It is not the original. And as long as we continue to believe in what isn't here, we perpetuate it. That's why this cycle of death and rebirth, this ever-ending, never-ending belief in good and bad continues until we know the truth, until we are awakened to the divine creation, the perfection of being. Then we're no longer under that government. We rise into this network of oneness, one perfect divine life without opposite.
So if these limitations are part of this universal belief, why is it that we need to have this antidote? Why can't we continue to live with good and bad and light and dark and all these other aspects of duality?
Well, to answer your question, you can continue to live in them. That's what the cycle of death and rebirth is all about. We continue to come back, this belief in reincarnation. The false sense of life just continues to perpetuate itself until at some point you're going to get tired of whatever it is you are experiencing. And that's the idea of the wrath of God, the love of God, which really doesn't want you to accept anything less than your divine inheritance. You're an eternal spiritual being. You're not a finite mortal being with an expiration date. You're not a human being with problems you need to figure out and solve. But you have to be ready for that. You have to be willing to give up the roller coaster that you're on. Because after a while, you'll start to see that you can't have good without bad. You can't have this false life without this false death. You can't have good health without bad health. These are the polar opposites. Again, it's not the truth. It's not what is real. But if you want to believe in it and you want to continue the drama that goes on in this human fabrication, then you just continue to believe in it. But at some point, your karmic debt gets so overwhelming, you are begging for out. And usually that's what happens when you're usually at the bottom and you can't get any lower than this is when we turn to spirit. Only what eventually you'll start to see is that spirit is a genuine help at this time. It's a law, it's a principle, but it would be very helpful if you had an understanding of how it works. We don't ask God for help. God can't give humanity any help because God is not withholding any help. What we must do is know the truth. God is running a perfect universe. It is us that is accepting and believing this mental material recreation about the divine creation.
I was just going to ask you, how is it that the spiritual science is the antidote to overcome this universal belief? What does that look like?
Well, the reason why I really like the idea of science is because you start with a rule and you have an outcome. When you make something scientific, you make it where it is provable. Whereas I think orthodox religion stays at this level of belief. In fact, to the best of my understanding, when Mary Baker Eddy discovered Christian Science, she brought her discovery to the other denominations of Christianity because she had figured out what Jesus was doing with his miracles. She figured out that spirit is a demonstrable principle. It's a law, and we must be conscious of it. And the healings that she was doing are off the charts. But if you look around and you start to see, well, why did they reject that? Well, part of it is because the dynamics of the mortal mind, the false sense of life, is threatened by the truth. And so until humanity has educated its thought up to spiritual apprehension, there's going to be a tremendous amount of resistance. Look at what they did to Jesus is a perfect example of that. And of course, Mary Baker Eddy went through her own persecutions here on earth. But in truth, if you really are looking for solution to what most of us are struggling with on a human level, problems, then a good way to go is to follow a tried and true metaphysical spiritual system.
I really like this quote that we have from one of the mystics from the Infinite Way, and I'll read it. The cause of the world's trouble is the sense of separation from God. The antidote for the world's trouble is the conscious awareness of God as omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, the reality of being. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think this is exactly the message of Christian Science. God is all, and all is good. Until you are really drilling down with that first commandment, until you understand, because most of us accept one God as opposed to many gods. When you're at that level of belief, you really defend your position. But in truth, spirit doesn't need human support. It is the only self-existent power in the universe. When you know the truth, you rest in the knowledge of the truth. And of course, you have to understand this term omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. If God is all, there's no room for anything else. Anything else is what Jesus called a lie. That's why in that original quote, it says, your father is a liar. And the whole idea of accepting a material birth, accepting a finite mortal existence, is violating spiritual law, which is the law of one perfect divine being.
Swami, we had a discussion in our last yoga class about the word apprehension. And I'm wondering, maybe this could be a good time for us to maybe talk about that.
Yeah, at the end of the class, because I have really been saying thought must be educated up to spiritual apprehension. And someone in the class questioned apprehension. Why would she use a word like apprehension, which has this connotation of being afraid or fearful? I don't think Mary Baker Eddy did that by mistake. And we were talking about maybe it should be comprehend. And if you really drill down with the word apprehend, it does mean understand or grasp, like you would apprehend a criminal. And in this case, the idea of being apprehensive means that you are afraid is also very applicable to this idea of educating thought up to spiritual understanding. And one of the reasons, like we were talking earlier, is this idea of mortal sense is threatened by the omnipresence of spirit. Because just like light dispels darkness, truth dispels error. Fear is the defense mechanism for the false sense of self. And when we are educating our thought up to spiritual comprehension, we become very apprehensive about what it is that we're learning. And another thing that's very important is the term comprehensive really can be applied to understanding this with your five material senses. And this is not where you're going to know the truth. In order for us to understand ourselves spiritually, we have to come out of the mind that is creating the false sense of self, the mortal mind. We must stop thinking, forming thoughts and opinions based on information coming through the material senses. Again, this is why meditation is the seventh stage of yoga and pratyahara is the fifth stage. What Mary Baker Eddy called prayer and what we in Kriya Yoga call meditation are basically the same experience with a different word. But we must be above corporeal sense. The divine principle is found before thought and above material sense.
We're going to pause right here to hear a word from our sponsor. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Kriya Yoga Theory 2 is a unique and revolutionary practice and forum designed to facilitate the growth process in human development. Apotheosis is a real experience and has an evidence procedure. You cannot lead someone to permanent change by doing for them what they must do themselves. Personal accountability and responsibility are the foundation of Kriya Yoga Theory 2. You must be engaged and devoted. Prana power brings virtue to overcome fear, wisdom to overcome ignorance, purpose to overcome selfishness, enthusiasm to overcome laziness. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. These sessions are a celestial positioning system to guide the individual into union with the divine. For more information or to sign up for your next session online, go to www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste.
Welcome back. For those who are just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So I think it's important for us to understand the three temptations of Jesus and how it relates to this spiritual science. Could you get us started with that?
Yeah, I have some stuff here on the three temptations of Jesus. And also in Revelations, this idea of to the angel of the church write. To help us understand the how to demonstrate divine law with scientific certainty, when Jesus is saying, "It is written," he is instructing this idea of the joining of spirit with truth, the joining of spirit with the divine will as the antidote. And it is applied three times to overcome the three modes of mortal thought, the three levels of world mind, in order to open the door of consciousness to divine mind. The lower mind of Gemini, which is instinct, appetite, preservation, and survival. The mid mind of Virgo, which is human intelligence, working through the five material senses. And the higher mind of Sagittarius, which is the collective world consciousness, being broadcasted and televised to personal sense. Now, these are the things creating this false mental material concept of life. And we must be able to come out of that before we can live under the influence of the divine mind, pure consciousness, unconditioned, unadulterated by human thought.
Now, would you just review those temptations of Jesus for us?
Yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take what was written in Matthew 4, 1 to 11. What I really want to focus on here is Jesus' response to these temptations. And the first one where he said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word proceeded out of the mouth of God." And then the second one he said again, "It is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God." And then the third one, "It is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve." Now, the idea that we really want to focus on is this written, writing. I have a soundbite from Herb Fitch that I thought maybe I would play so that we can start to grasp what it's meant, not only in Revelations where it says, "to the angel of the church, write," because that is so important when you look at what a church is. A church means Lord's house, and a church is the equivalent to what we call in Kriya Yoga a chakra. It is that place in consciousness where divine idea, the word of God, is the same as the divine idea, which is what is comprehensive and intelligible to human consciousness. And so when you find that place where your thought is the same as the divine idea, and we can only do this after we have gone through this transformation, this transfiguration, this raising of consciousness from the root center to the third eye center or to the throat center. Again, there's a lot of preparatory work here that must be in place in order for us to really demonstrate divine law. But we have this soundbite from Herb Fitch. This is from the La Jolla series, Class 10A. And if anybody's interested in the whole audio file or the entire program, you can get this at mysticalprinciples.com, and I'll play it.
Now, what is the explanation for one of the most mysterious events in the Bible? We have decided that it is not a symbol, but a living event. And now let us see that not a single word was spoken during the Transfiguration. It was an event that could only be understood in the silence above words alone. It had to be experienced to be believed. At one moment, the body of Jesus Christ stood there among the disciples. In another moment, the body vanished. Everything vanished. Head, face, shoulders, chest, arms, legs. Where did the heart go, the liver, the lungs? Where were the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth? They all disappeared in front of three witnesses. And in place of them, there was nothing but pure, white, radiant light. Shall we be satisfied with a stereotyped explanation? The astounding truth of this transfiguration is given to us by John. Chapter 1, verse 9. Look at it. That was the light, the true light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. That was the true light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. The universal nature of that light is stressed by John. That was the light of you, of me, of him, of her, the light of every man. The universal light of God was revealed. That which no human eye can see today was made visible to the spiritual eye of the three disciples. They saw the light of God, the universal light of every person who walks the face of this earth. It was not the light of Jesus alone, and that must be clarified in your consciousness. It was the light of mankind that they witnessed, the light behind our entire world, the light we are looking at every day and cannot see, the substance of God. And then to make sure we know that, John tells us it was a light which lighteth every man. And John tells us more. Again, chapter 1, verses 4 and 5. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehendeth it not. Again, in verse 10, the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. That light is life. That light is the life of the world, which makes that which is the true spiritual universe. Ye are the light of the world. One more thing we should know and clarify is this. There is a difference between Christ, Spirit, and light. And this might be a very perfect place for us to know that difference. Let us take the difference between Spirit and light. When the will of God is implanted in Spirit, that spirit containing the will of God becomes the light. The light becomes spirit animated with the will of God. In other words, light contains the will of God. The Christ of God is the perfect, ideal, divine image. And that is why it is said that Christ sits on the right hand of God. Christ contains the perfection of God's will for mankind. The perfection of that will, called Christ, is impressed into the spirit, animating it into that which is called the light, so that the light contains the full impress of God's will. And that whole process is called writing. And so throughout the Bible you will find phrases that say it is written, meaning the light contains the fullness of God's will, and it is written into the light that you are perfect as the Father, that all that the Father hath is thine. And if you learn to let the light live itself as you, the light writes or expresses that which is written into the light by the hand of God. So see Christ as your divine self, Spirit as your divine substance, light as the will of God expressed in Christ, written into Spirit, animating it into activity called light. And that light must express if you are to find the better, more abundant, more harmonious, the eternal life of your being. You cannot bottle up the light of your own being. You cannot bottle up infinity without paying the price.
Yeah, and I think to respond to this, I have something from Ames Noel called the Decalogue, and I'll read it. Beginning with the acknowledgement that God is the basic, fundamental, and primal cause of all real being, logic demands that there be deduced from this perfect premise the spiritual facts which are the inevitable outcome or effect of this great and only cause. If human beliefs are not permitted to color judgment, and reasoning is made to proceed in an orderly and logical manner from perfect cause to perfect effect, all conclusions will be correct. If then the Decalogue be viewed in this logical manner, this spiritual message will be seen and understood. End of quote.
So I really like what Ames Noel is saying here. If human beliefs are not permitted to color judgment, that's a big statement right there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is something that we've been aspiring to, is to live under the influence of divine mind and stop accepting the information that's coming through the material senses. Kind of reminds me of what Gilbert Carpenter said, the idea that if somebody is having trouble voicing and expressing the mind of Christ, a thing divinely and scientifically natural to one whose thought has been freed from the influence of mortal mind. And we've also talked about this in other shows, that it's, for most of us, it's more difficult to come out of mortal mind, because for most of us, we don't even know what that is and what it looks like. And we don't know the difference between thinking and knowing, the difference between a thought and an idea, the difference between world thought and the Word of God. One works on duality. One works in contrast. One is driven by belief, and the other is in the realms of the absolute, no contrast, pure consciousness, no conflict in divine idea, the perfection of being.
So if we can learn to use some of these antidotes you've been talking about, then we should be able to demonstrate this principle with deeds and not words?
Right. Consciousness is experience. We must maintain this level of consciousness, keeping our mind in constant relation with the divine idea. Stop thinking, start knowing. And after a while, you'll start to see that it is a pragmatic, practical guide for highly effective living, because how we think is what we become. But when we forsake these modes of mortal thinking and we come out of these three modes of mortal thought, so that you're not tricked by the tempter to believe the world mind is your thought, and you are aware of the invisible, intangible omnipresence of divine mind, and you let it take over the scientific government of your body, it will resolve things into thoughts and exchange the objects of sense for the divine idea. But you use what is appearing in your material consciousness as the check engine light on the dashboard of consciousness, because you want to make sure what you're calling truth is the one true truth.
We're going to end our program for the day, so listeners, be sure to visit the website www.ipdtransform.com. On the homepage, you see the fading banner Blog Talk Radio. Click it, directs you to its catalog page. Click the products tab, and then online classes directs you to all the classes that Swami has available. Any final thoughts about today's show?
Well, I would like to encourage people to join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance, get the light in your soul, and overcome the belief in imperfection. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.